The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
The following podcast is sponsored by AppFolio Investment Management.
In a recent study, AppFolio Investment Management customers reported up to 70% growth in their total EUM over a one-year period. How? They were able to cut fundraising time down by 50%, automate waterfall distributions, and impress investors with a professional self-service investor portal. AppFolio Investment Management is your partner in commercial real estate. Learn why thousands of real estate investment managers are choosing AppFolio Investment Management at appfolioinvestmentmanagement.com.
Welcome to the program. This is Mike Consul. Our guest is Tony Smedley. He's Managing Director, Head of European Private Equity with Heitman. He is a member of the firm's European Investment Committee and Global Management Committee. He is also responsible for leading Heitman's European Private Equity Group, and as such, its investment activities across Europe, including acquisitions, asset management operations, and strategy. Tony Smedley, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you. You know, all Americans tend to be obsessed with what goes on in Europe, especially in the way of food and drink, but also real estate. So what is the headline right now in terms of European real estate for investors?
Well, before I come on to answer that question, my wife's American, so she's also interested in food and drink and hopefully a little bit more than that. But you're quite right to point out.
A lot of baguettes and brie in your kitchen.
And amazingly, my wife and I both speak French, which is sort of going against the grain. But anyway, we should leave that there.
There you go.
The headline in Europe now, I would say, is real estate is at a pivotal point. And certainly in the private markets, it's at a juncture in its existence as an institutional asset class where there's a huge shift of institutional allocations towards longer duration assets. And I think it's up to us now as an industry. I've been in real estate for 30 years, so all of my career, and enjoyed every minute of it. But I have to say, if there's a headline of any kind generically relating to real estate, I think it's one of the most exciting times for the industry, certainly since I came into real estate all of those years ago.
Well, you have this long time frame. So when you say there's this huge shift underway, you're not, you have decades of experience in it. So that's important for that kind of perspective. Why the shift? And why and when you talk about longer term, like committing dollars for a longer term, how does that change where those dollars are going? But let's start with, that's a compound question. I shouldn't do that. Why the shift? And where are those dollars going if you're looking for a very long hold?
Many investors across the globe are looking to solve for long duration investments, and they haven't really been able to find opportunities to allocate to private market opportunities in scale. So what we're seeing and observing across the globe is a large shift of private market activity. And I think last year, this stat I read, that private market AUM now globally is about $1 trillion. And all the evidence from our investors is that is only going to grow, because each of them, whether they are endowments or insurance companies or pension funds in whatever part of the world, they're all solving for an outcome. And that is increasingly linked to longer duration investment. So I think the real estate industry is finally growing up. And I think it needs to. And I think it's going through a shift which is quite transformational and very exciting for anyone looking to join the industry at this stage.
Well, what do you mean by growing up? I mean, so what are the indications that you're starting to see facial hair on European real estate or real estate globally?
I think in the past, real estate has been perceived as a relatively small local industry, and it's a fragmented market. And the opportunity in Europe is, in many ways, many of those characteristics still exist. But what's happened is real estate owners have realized it isn't just a case of having their name on the title deeds and collecting rent. And I'm delighted about that. They've actually realized that real estate has a life and an existence and an operational component. And it isn't just about a relationship between landlord and tenant of collecting the rent not doing very much more than that. It's about providing a service, an opportunity to an occupier, whether it's of a residential building or an office building or an industrial property. It's a service to that occupier, and the real estate industry needs to become and is becoming more operational as a result. And that I think is expanding the universe of operation of real estate more into a real assets environment, which is the future, I think, of real estate investing.
Interesting. So the professionalization of real estate, the maturation of real estate investing, long hold. So is the long hold, talk a little bit more about the long hold to achieve these outcomes. I mean, real estate goes up, real estate goes down. It doesn't seem to go down for very long anymore, but it's gotten very frothy, I guess is the word a lot of people use. And yet I know stateside, they say this run could go on for 10 more years. So why is the long duration, the long hold period, either essential or desirable for real estate investing?
I think it's important to see through the cycles that we all observe, and the equity capital markets, which has been the dominant feature of many global investor portfolios, aside from government bonds, of course, is very cyclical. And real estate certainly has its cycles, but it is in the long term, it's a more dependable asset class. And generically speaking, not every sector, but generically speaking, a substantial proportion of total return from real estate is obtained through income. And that is quite reassuring for many investors looking to allocate. And as a result, they tend to try and allocate for the longer duration, partly to see through the cycles in the way I describe, but also partly because if a substantial amount of your return is coming through current earnings, that's quite a positive dynamic for the industry.
You know, one of the things I've seen happening, I want to know if it's happening in Europe too, there's a lot of niches that are no longer acting. I mean, they become so strong that rather than playing a fringe role in a real estate portfolio, they're playing a more central role. And I'm thinking in terms of data centers, life science real estate, self-storage. You could probably name a few others. You get the idea here. Are you seeing the same thing happening in Europe? And how does that fit into kind of this new shift you're talking about?
That's absolutely true, Mike. And because we're a global business, we can observe more mature parts of the world, of which certainly the US is the largest market. And we've observed significant growth and institutionalization in the sorts of subsectors you've just mentioned. So self-storage is a big one. Data centers, obviously another. Cold storage, another subset of industrial. We've seen huge shift in that market in the US, and we are just beginning that journey now in Europe. I think the stats would tell us that we're about 30 years, that's a generation behind the US in terms of the demand supply equilibrium of all of those sectors. And that just quickly would be storage, senior housing, student housing, residential for rent, which is present in some markets in Europe, but certainly not present everywhere. These sectors are very nascent. And if you again, coming back to the investor community, the investors that we deal with, they are looking to rotate capital out of what have been very traditional asset classes in real estate, typically dominated by offices, retail. They're looking to rotate out of those more into these alternative sectors for two or three different reasons. Firstly, because they have different growth dynamics and that they are at an earlier stage in their institutionalization. And secondly, fundamentally, if you think about many of those sectors, certainly those with any housing component, it's a demographic story and not an economic story. And I think the reality is that 14 out of the 15 oldest countries in the world in terms of population age are in Europe. So if there's one thing we need to do a little bit better in future, it's the provision of homes, generally speaking, for rent for all parts of the population, but also certainly for the senior end.
Yeah, no, that's... The demographics are a little frightening as far as that goes. Economies don't do well with an old population. And we're seeing that in Japan. We're seeing it in Italy. And it's been that way around the world. I don't know if that's going to change as we become a more automated economy and robotics are brought to bear and all that. But, you know, you hint at something that really I wanted to ask you about, and that's the difference between European and U.S. real estate, because I think people in the United States, investors here can tend to think of Europe as, well, Europe's like the United States is like Europe, but there are differences between the real estate markets. Illustrate some of the major differences that exist between the two continents.
The US is a very good lead indicator for us in Europe, and that's very helpful because we can see things that have done well in the US and also things that have done less well, and also learn from some of the things that haven't necessarily gone to plan. One component of that in some of the subsectors I've just mentioned, certainly some of the housing sectors in the US, is there's been a lot of overdevelopment in the US in certain parts of the housing market. That is not present in Europe, far from it. In fact, we have not been building enough homes to meet new household formation. We're way behind. So it's useful to be able to look at a mature market, observe its history, dynamic, its growth patterns, things that have gone well and less well. And we can apply that. Now, it's not exactly the same because culturally we're different in Europe. We have many, many more countries and different languages. But nonetheless, I think it's a great lead indicator of what we can do. And the fantastic thing about the US and why I love it so much, apart from the fact my wife's family is from there and my kids have dual passports, even though I don't, which always worries me. One thing I love about it is such an environment of opportunity and growth. And if there's one thing it does exceptionally well, if it sees an opportunity, it captures it, it acknowledges it exists and builds into it. And that's something that I think we can learn from in Europe. We need to be much more forward looking. And hopefully that will change as a result of the real estate industry I mentioned before maturing, becoming a little bit more forward looking than perhaps it has in the past.
So I have to ask you about office real estate, because as you know, here in the United States, for sure, we are fretting over that because talk about a shift. It appears that the whole work style is going to go to much more of a hybrid sort of situation. Employers are thinking in terms of maybe there's an opportunity here to shrink my footprint in the office market so that I don't have as much overhead. My employees like being at home. All the data is telling me they're doing just as well or better, even more productive at home. If I want to recruit talent, I need to make that an option. So what about office in Europe? And I know that things have been a little bit different there with regard to COVID. You've kept your school, and also, like, for instance, you've kept your schools open a lot You've been more aggressive about keeping schools open than the United States. So there's been a little bit more in Europe of a stick to business sort of thing, or, you know, stick to the business of education or the business of business. Is office real estate in Europe looking shaky at all? Is that still a kind of a wait and see approach? That seems to be the one property type that is really hanging in the balance, even though hospitality has been hit very hard by this. Everybody seems to feel that it'll come back, but there's a fundamental shift going on in the working world when it comes to, I mean, driven in part by technology and so on. Anyway, long-winded way of asking that basic question of office: what's the future for office in Europe?
It's a great question, Mike. And, you know, we could have a very similar debate, but very different about retail, couldn't we? But in offices, it is absolutely true that the future will be hybrid. I do not subscribe, however, to the view that offices are a thing of the past, which I think some doomsayers perhaps have been indicating that offices will effectively move to people's homes, because I think that's just part of the solution. And it's interesting, this hybrid format. I looked at my career, and it depends on your background, your career, what industry you're in, what potential you have to operate remotely. And I think some parts of some industries are certainly at risk of almost moving entirely remote. I think otherwise, it will be a hybrid format. Offices will still be required. Humans are city creatures, whether they admit it or not openly, I think is another matter, but they're city creatures. They want to be in environments which have activity, and they are human nature requires physical interaction, and I do not think that will change. I just think it will look slightly different, and the office of the future will not be the office of the past. Separate offices, for example, I think that's a thing of the past. I think offices will become much more collaborative, almost more of a community setting than they've been. And as long as, again, our industry owners such as Heitman provide those sorts of opportunities to occupiers, I don't see offices as being materially affected in the long term in the right locations in cities which are well connected. And we, as just as an example, we sold out of our office exposures regionally here in Europe 5 years ago. We have just reinvested in office in London in the last 6 months. And that's purposeful. We've chosen to do that. We back the recovery in this city, and we believe in it. So I guess I would say we're putting our money where our mouth is.
Now, you know, you talked about being urban creatures of the city. Interesting that you're in Europe, and you tell me whether you agree with this, because you may have a different perspective. In Europe, it tends to be there's the city and then there's the countryside. And in the United States, there's the city, but there's the suburbs. And then there's the kind of farther flung suburbs. And a lot of people will live out in rural areas as well. But Europe tends to concentrate, the populations tend to concentrate more in cities, and the countryside is much less developed or turned to as a place to live full time. Is that consistent with your observations, Tony? And what implications would that have for real estate?
It's interesting. Every time I travel to the U.S., particularly when I'm with my family over there, Mike, I always get serious home envy, house envy, because every house you visit is thousands and thousands and thousands of square feet, and here in Europe, you'd be delighted with anything that's north of sort of 800 square feet or maybe 1,000 square feet at best. So I think it's just a difference in living style. We have much more densely populated cities. And I've always said about Europe, you know, whilst it's a large conglomeration, if you like, of countries, it is essentially an investment landscape of cities. And they're not as big as many of those in the US, of course. But we have some very dominant cities and we have some very secondary cities in Europe. But they're all very densely populated. So I think it is very different here. And I do think people will return to city environments. And that doesn't mean they will leave either a suburban home or a home on the edge of the city or a country home they may have in the country they live in. I don't suggest that they will depart that and up sticks and move to the city. I just think that they will always wish to spend time in the city. And we've observed that if you look at a lifestyle of an average family, typically you find that the couple who may meet either in the city tend to move out if and when they have children. They move out to gain more space, a larger yard or garden. And when those children have left home and either gone to study or gone to work, those parents want to be back. So that the city is a very big draw. They want to be back in an environment where they can enjoy the buzz of the city environment. And that's why I say I believe in the long term we are urban creatures. And I think in Europe it's probably a little bit more exaggerated simply by virtue of the nature of the makeup of the countries and the cities and the fact we have very densely populated environments.
So, you know, when I mentioned office seems to be hanging in the balance because of the pandemic, you mentioned retail. And the United States, of course, is famous for vastly overbuilding its retail real estate. We have retail everywhere, but that's beginning to change with the online or e-commerce. However, a lot of changes going on in retail to make it more experiential, giving people something different than simply showing up and buying a product. Where are the opportunities right now in retail in Europe? Is retail at the right level? Is it underbuilt right now? Where do you see the opportunities in retail?
I think retail is overbuilt, Mike, truthfully. And I think that's part of the challenge for this market. With online retail spending, I think currently around 12% in Europe, it's expected to double in the next 5 years. So the physical retail experience is changing rapidly. And I would say most retailers, if they're honest with themselves, would admit they have too much space. And that's a challenge for the industry. How is that managed? Alternative uses for that space. I can think of many ideas for that, many of them along the lines of some of the niche or alternative or specialty sectors I mentioned earlier, urban self-storage, for example, or conversion to some form of housing provision, whether for households or students or seniors, doesn't really matter. But I think there are conversion opportunities in the right locations, but there will be some assets in the retail market that become stranded. And I think that's just the reality of the overbuilding that occurred in many, many locations. And it's quite interesting. So where are we now? I mentioned I've been in the industry 30 years. Around that time, so 20, 30 years ago, retail investment, I think for decades, had been the most stable long-term performance of any of the real estate asset classes. So you had an allocation to retail for stability. And it's interesting, isn't it, how that now has completely changed. The new retail, in many cases, is the distribution warehouse that supplies you the goods and the raw materials that you're buying online. Because that is the new retail, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's interesting. So just in terms of an overview, Tony, what are the top markets and asset classes in Europe at the moment?
We like self-storage a lot. We're investing heavily in that. We also like the other operational asset classes I reference, so residential, senior housing, student housing, in my view, those are the most compelling opportunities in Europe at present for two reasons. One, they're massively undersupplied, and two, they're serving a demographic shift in this market, and it is not reliant on an economic outcome. The last thing I would say about the appeal of these is most of those assets that I've referenced have an ability to be able to keep pace or exceed inflation. And we haven't talked about inflation, and that's out there as economic noise at the moment across the globe. And if there's one thing you'd want to be in a real estate context, it's an asset class that has the ability to be able to turn over rental levels fairly swiftly. And those I've mentioned tend to score very highly in that area.
Now, is what you just said applicable to every major city in Europe, or are there some cities in Europe that you would redline either because they don't look to be performing well down the road, whether for demographic reasons or for some economic weaknesses or what have you?
Again, I think it's a question of cities, not countries, Mike. So I wouldn't write any of the cities off because all of them have opportunities. I don't think there's anywhere that we would say categorically we would not invest in. I think there are significant nuances and differences between the sectors that I mentioned and where the best opportunity lies. I would say, and this is not just because I'm a Brit, but I would say right now the UK, I think, presents well vis-a-vis many of its continental European peers. And that's partly because there's been a dearth of capital in the market following Brexit. And the virus and the shift of all of our lives since COVID hasn't helped, but it is recovering quickly. And I do think it is an interesting place to invest. But aside from that, most of the continental markets that we observe, operate in, spend time in, have partners in, all have significant opportunity in all of those sectors I've mentioned. Again, to reference that point, more fundamentally, because these sectors are so undersupplied. And if you look across, historically, I suppose if you step back, what is the intrinsic value of a piece of real estate? One of the most compelling features of a piece of real estate, and has been forever, this is reason why landed investments became so popular many, many centuries ago, is it's a scarce resource. So scarcity is one of the most significant component parts of value investing. So if you come back to that very basic thesis of investing in physical assets and land, then you would tend to prefer to invest in those parts of the market that have an undersupply. And I would say that's the case in all countries in Europe about those sectors I mentioned.
So what do you see as the next opportunities in Europe? Are there any emerging markets that you see, maybe some secondary markets that aren't necessarily ready for prime time, aren't ready to be plucked right now, but are on the come?
We love the Nordics. I think the Nordics is a market we will build our investment presence in. We don't have a large allocation to those markets at the moment. Historically, they have not been necessarily very large or even in some cases very liquid, but that is changing. And if you look at the population dynamics there, and they score very highly as countries and cities in terms of being nice places to live in, and that might seem a very basic analogy, but that ranks very highly, particularly since COVID. People will choose locations where they have a very good quality of life. And that's important for all cities, wherever they are in the world, to realize that that is something they need to continue to focus on, the appeal of the environment. And the Nordic scores very highly. So I would certainly rank the Nordics highly when looking across the European landscape.
Our guest has been Tony Smedley. He's Managing Director, Head of European Private Equity at Heitman. Tony, your comments have been lucid and erudite. You know when somebody's got a command of their subject matter, and you definitely come across as a guy who's paying a lot of attention to the pulse of European real estate. I really appreciate you coming on the program, sharing your knowledge with us, and don't want to keep you from that. The baguette and brie that I mentioned earlier in the program, and maybe a piping cup of tea to go with it.
That's very kind, Mike. It's been thoroughly enjoyable. Look forward to engaging further, but it's been a delight. Thank you for inviting me on the program.
This podcast was sponsored by AppFolio.